Through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome. Good morning. Dennis O'Brien with the Retirement Life and Investing Show. Today we have a very special guest, Ed Dangerfield, who's a 35-year bond pro on Wall Street. And we're going to talk about interest rates, the Federal Reserve, and a lot of other things today. So get ready, and here we go today. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dennis. Good morning.
Good, good. Thanks for coming up. We appreciate it. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on out there and then later on get into your background. But I think the number one question a lot of people have is, over your 35 years on Wall Street, when you've worked on the bond trading desk and I've seen everything, have you ever seen rates so low and stayed so low in your time?
No. You know, the lows in rates were post the most recent, disaster, 07, 08, and where the 10-year got down to, as low as like a 120. And we're up from that, but only, 1.4%. I mean, I think the 10-year went out at a 233 on Friday. So rates have been remarkably low, largely because of the Fed stimulation that was, necessary after all of the fiscal disaster.
Right. When you talk about the 10-year, you're talking about the 10-year Treasury.
Right.
Which is really the key rate that everybody goes off of.
Right. That's the key rate for
mortgages,
for mortgage finance, as well as an important part on what's called the yield curve, which
right.
is the sort of a graph of all Treasuries starting
right.
from, short bills to 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5, 7, 10s, and 30s. And if you graph that out, that is the so-called yield curve.
Yeah. That's very interesting because mortgage rates go off the 10-year Treasury. So if the 10-year if they start buying bonds and lower the yield, mortgage rates tend to go down, right?
Sure.
Right.
And you saw a tremendous amount of refinancing activity in 2008 and 2009 as rates were at last seen in the Eisenhower administration lows. So
right.
a lot of people, were able to refinance and lock in those lower rates as the 10-year dropped.
So if people have 5, 6, 7% mortgages, they were able to refinance down to 3 or 4%.
That's right.
Yeah. So people can redo their mortgages at any time. If rates go up, they can just hold on to their low-yield mortgage. And they're all set, right?
That's right. Yeah.
That's a big thing. Now, tell me about yourself. How does a teacher from New Jersey become a Wall Street bond daddy?
well, yes.
I won't call you daddy.
Yeah. Guilty as charged. I was a college English professor many years ago. I got hired onto Wall Street as a financial writer. Marriage and your first kid will do that to you.
yeah.
And once. That was in the early 1980s as, Wall Street was just beginning to expand. And once you get on the merry-go-round, it doesn't take that long to figure out that, as a writer, you get in the door, but then you want to get, in the words of a mentor of mine, a little closer to the cash register,
right.
Either, selling or trading or what have you. And I gravitated towards trading,
right.
Many, many years ago.
So did you start in the municipal bond area?
I did. I started trading, trading at municipal housing bonds way back when.
Way back in the day.
And the whole municipal market, I mean, it's still an important market, but it was cut roughly in half in 1986 with the tax law changes, in the prior to the so-called the Reagan Tax Act, banks used to be able to buy municipal bonds and deduct the cost of purchasing them, which right. was a double dip in right, terms right. of taxation, right. and that was eliminated, and that that necessitated a reduction in municipal bond issuance, yeah. you know, for the better, I believe.
Yeah. Well, you know the old joke about how does a bond trader make $1 million?
You know, start with two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. See, yeah, this material is old.
Boom, boom. Right.
Ryan, our young intern, is laughing over there from Wheeler High School. Welcome, Ryan. Tell us about your family a little bit.
Well, I've married to your wife's sister.
Whoops! Ed and I know each other very well.
Oh, absolutely, for many, many years. Three daughters, one grandchild, life is good.
Life is good. Well, that's good. Tell us from your perspective right now where you think we are as an economy right now. Do you feel like we're on? Seems like the signals are mixed. What do you think?
Well, it's never clear. The old the corollary to the joke about $1 million versus $2 million is if I really knew, I'd be out sailing my yacht and not talking to you. But
let's be clear, Ed does not have a yacht.
No, okay. That's correct. But yeah. No, the signals are clearly mixed. I mean, the economy is obviously in vastly better shape than it was in 2007, 2008, 2009. The Fed fiscal stimulus worked in that sense. And the issue now is, as the economy starts to begin to percolate, right. The Fed has started to reverse, and even under the Yellen Fed has started to raise interest rates, and more importantly, the way the Fed stimulated the economy largely was purchasing, trillions of dollars of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities.
Right, that's how they got.
Right.
All right, if you have any questions for Ed, my phone number here is 860-464-9490. We're going to take a break in a minute or two, and we'll talk a little bit more about what we think the Fed's going to do, interest rates and whatnot, because remember, the cost of money affects everything in the economy, and we want to be clear on that. My name is Dennis O'Brien. I'm president of O'Brien Retirement Investment Group in Mystic, Connecticut. My website is obrienretire.com. If you email me at dobrien@ifgrr.com, dobrien@ifgrr.com, I will send you my Retirement 10 Commandments, which is just a PowerPoint presentation. And my picture is on the back page, and remember, I have a face made for radio, so be kind and whatnot. But in any case, we'll talk further about interest rates and what's going on. We're also going to ask Ed about some of the stories, what would happen if Hartford went into bankruptcy, what would happen to the municipal bond market for the state municipal bonds. We're going to talk about Michael Bloomberg a little bit, some of the characters maybe he's met. Ed was there on 9/11. We're going to talk a little bit about what he went through then. And, how do you keep your sense of humor through the rough times? So when we come back, we'll follow up. If you have any questions now, 860-464-9490. Feel free to call. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll get back to you when you're ready. So take it away with Jessica by the Allman Brothers, and we'll go from there and see what happens. But thank you. Welcome back, everybody. Dennis O'Brien from O'Brien Retirement Investment Group. I'm with Ed Dangerfield, a 35-year Wall Street pro, concentrated on the bond market, specifically mortgage bonds, and we're going to talk about his career and what he's seen through the years and what's going on in the current economy. Ed, I got a question for you. I'm getting a lot of people walking up to me this week that own homes along the shore here, and they're extremely concerned about this tax bill as it's proposed right now. They're going to eliminate the deductions for, as you know, property taxes and state income taxes, which in Connecticut, well, we pay both. And over the river, over the bay there in New York, also there, and also in Rhode Island and whatnot. What's your sense of how this treats the Northeast at this point?
Everyone is concerned about that. Anybody who lives in the Northeast, particularly, further south, New York City, New Jersey, the highest taxed per capita state in the country. excuse me. The current House bill does provide for some mortgage deduction capped up to $10,000.
Right.
The Senate just blows everything off because the House had to have that because there are a number of reps. They needed the votes from the New York, New Jersey, and California state representatives.
Yeah.
The Senate notes that there are only Democrats, the Democratic senators in those states, so they don't really care as much.
They don't care as much.
Yeah.
So
what'll happen is they'll go to, assuming this thing comes to fruition, they'll go to conference, and the House has said, it's a line in the sand, they're going to do that, but, even money bet that they cave like cheap suits, and it's going to hurt property values clearly.
Big time in the area. That's the main concern I'm hearing out there. So I think it's a disaster for Connecticut, and I hope they modify that, because to take away deductions just like that, boom, with no phase in, no planning, everything else, it's really, really, really not fair to a lot of people here in the Northeast. All right, let's talk about Hartford a minute. You were a municipal bond market. I started up in the muni market, so we're both experienced with it. What would be the effect if Hartford, there's been talk, I don't think it happens, but I hope it doesn't, but what would happen if Hartford went into bankruptcy? What would be the effect on the state municipal bond market?
Well, it's a microcosm. If you look at one of the largest issuers, Puerto Rico,
right.
You look at some of the other states that have had problems. I mean, in secondary trading, those bonds are already being valued as down a couple of credit notches. So
right.
It would clearly cost more money to borrow. A lot of people in the muni market are now, when we were in the muni market years ago, GOs, state and local tax-based bonds were traded vastly superior to revenue-based bonds.
Right.
Well, now, given all the state problems, statewide problems, and particularly in anticipation of possible reduction of state deductions and what that does to, migrations out of the Northeast and all.
Right.
The revenue bonds are starting to trade better than GOs. Now, not all revenue bonds, but
right.
Certainly not like nuclear-backed stuff. But
toll roads,
water and sewer bonds. Everybody's going to need waters and sewers.
Right.
And so there's a shift going on in the muni market right now, and
okay.
How it shakes out, we'll know in a year or so.
Right. 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 For everyone out there, the municipal bond market is this huge market out there where any municipality wants to float bonds to build bridges, airports, roads, finance schools, basically run their budgets. It's a big market, and traditionally the interest from it has been federally tax-free and can be Connecticut tax-free, too, if you buy in-state bonds or Puerto Rico. That's why Puerto Rico bonds proliferated the way they did. Now, if you have a bankruptcy in a major town in any state, that can go through and really, really reverberate around the state. So it's something that's looked upon by fear and trepidation by finance officers of each town or county, depending on the state you're in.
Sure, and we have you look at Chicago, which has basically is now shut out of the municipal bond market from their fiscal woes that are. They're on, what are they on, year two or year three?
So Chicago cannot float a municipal bond issue right now.
Not at any kind of a yield acceptable interest rate.
Interest rate.
I mean, there's always a price, but
right. That's incredible.
Yeah.
That tells you that
that could be the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing and whatnot. Just to go off a little bit. I showed Ed, I've been working on this Connecticut growth covenant, trying to get our state going again, and some of the things that I'm talking about let's getting our state government run a little bit leaner over the next 5 years or 20% less, trying to cut the state and income tax, the sales and income tax by 10% over the next 5 years, and giving each town in the state, 169 different towns, the option to go with a lowest rate, which is Greenwich. Greenwich has the lowest property taxes in the state at 11.5 mils or whatever it is. and giving each town in the state the option to pay Greenwich's rate, their land homeowners in that state, increasing state aid to that town in order to do that, limiting their future expenditures by 2% a year, and hopefully getting these towns up and running and going again. What happens to Norwich or New London? Norwich at 48 mills, New London at 44 mills, if they go down to 11. I think property values would jump dramatically. I think there'd be a lot of reinvestment and money flow into those towns and be a way to get our state going again. And I think the revenues that would be lost initially, made up through the state aid, would basically bounce back fairly rapidly. In 3 or 4 years, they'd be even and running and growing again. So I think all the stakeholders in the state, you know, the citizens, the unions, the municipal management, you know, they're going to have to forego, you know, any changes if we did this for, like, you know, 20, 30 years in order to get things invigorated again. I think what happens is if we can start to grow again and attract population, I can say to the union members out there that basically your union contracts will actually mean something instead of being recompromised every time we go into a state crisis, right? We need more cops, firemen, you know, state union workers if the population grows. But it's not going to grow. And with this tax plan coming, it's a double whammy, so we need to do something dramatically. Ed, you were there early on when Michael Bloomberg showed up in New York and on the trading floors. You want to tell us a little bit about what you saw initially?
Michael Bloomberg, you know, multi-billionaire, has earned every penny of it. When I was in the business, you know, bond traders would have on their desk 3 or 4 different market information systems. One, a Quotron, which was, I believe, owned by Citibank at the time. A Telerate system, which I believe was owned by Reuters, and 1 or 2 other systems. And then Bloomberg, when he left Merrill Lynch, where he developed his initial terminal for Merrill, went out on his own. Originally, a joint venture with Merrill back in the
Merrill gave him like $30 million to get up and running. Right.
Yeah. And took a piece of the company. Yeah. I don't know if Mike ever bought that out or not. I'm not sure.
But Mr. Bloomberg, he did
probably. Yeah, but he had a better mousetrap, if you will.
Right.
And he was completely, having been a creature of Wall Street, he was completely astute about it. I was at a firm at the time, we had a corporate bond researcher who had a very detailed historical trading interrelationships of corporate rates, a number of different ones. Bloomberg wanted that data. He wouldn't give it to him. So Bloomberg went upstairs to the head of the large firm at the time, and within a month, all of us on the trading desk, there were, you know, corporate, municipal, mortgage desk, probably, you know, 75, 80 people had free terminals for 2 years, in return for which Bloomberg got his data.
So he knew.
And from that, that was how he built a superior database.
Yeah.
And now, at, you know, every firm, you know, buy side or sell side, rather than all these different machines, there's a Bloomberg. It covers everything. You can, you know, live markets if you want. You know, it's all the different, various price points.
Right.
But the level of data and analysis is staggering, and he just continues to improve the product.
Right. So he knocks out any competitors from coming in.
And he charges
a premium price.
Right.
But
and he's international now. This has happened through all London major financial market also. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you leave him, he's not a happy camper, right?
Well,
yeah, he's tough. He's a tough entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So, and whatnot.
He's done a great job.
Yeah. So you've met a lot of characters when you worked on the street, right?
Oh yeah. In 35 years is a long time. The bond market has changed tremendously in terms of people. When I was a kid in the business, there were, raconteurs.
Right.
Characters. Yeah. I mean, as a guy, you know, Phil, who was, thoroughly intimidating to all the young guys. He was a big corporate bond salesman who had a huge jar of hot peppers on his desk, and Phil was a large man, but he would be grabbing a fistful of those peppers and eating them. And he also liked to go out at night with brokers and clients and stuff, and was known to show up periodically, sound sleeping it off on the couch in the ladies' room when gals first came into work. So
oh my God, is he still alive?
I don't know. I'd be shocked.
Yeah, you wonder what happened to some of these guys.
But there were a lot of those guys. But the business was, it was also, you'd get on the phone and you'd buy and sell hundreds of millions of dollars worth of bonds on the phone. And
on
it
the
was
phone.
The, your word is your bond was right. Not just a cliche. If you stretched the truth once, you were out. You had no, and people did.
If you broke a trade.
Oh, nobody
would deal with you anymore.
Right, right.
So the club was pretty intense, and you didn't break the rules or else you,
correct.
You were out.
Right.
And that's true in many industries, just to be handshake and whatnot.
Yeah.
But,
as things got more technological and Bloomberg was a symptom of that, now the raconteurs, everybody still has a personality, but it's vastly more quantitative, and the people in ascendance for the last 15 years of the market are MBAs, quants, financial engineers who applied their skills to finance and the like. And it's not better or worse, but it is different.
It's
There's a lot
different.
Less room for characters who slide on relationships.
Exactly. We'll be right back. Dennis O'Brien, President of O'Brien Retirement, with the Retirement Life and Investing Show. We'll be right back. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Dennis O'Brien from O'Brien Retirement Investment Group, www.obrienretire.com. Send for your free 10 commandments, retirement 10 commandments, and I'll send them to you. Okay, I'm with Ed Dangerfield, who's worked on Wall Street for 35 years. Ed helps manage billions of dollars in bond money. And we're going to talk about something I wanted to ask Ed about. We don't talk about it often, but Ed, you were down on Wall Street during 9/11. Just briefly tell us what happened and how close you were.
Yeah, I was around the corner. Went to work, and as you know, my dear wife, your sister-in-law, is a in the news business.
Yep.
And she called me up around 8:20 something like that, and said, "Hey, a plane just crashed into the World Trade Center. Go check it out." And we both thought, okay, some knucklehead flew a pipe of cud into the building,
thing.
And so I go over there. It's like a block and a half away.
Yeah.
And I'm standing across the street and I see, it was very disconcerting. There was tons of paper coming all over the street that was singed because in hindsight, the towers or any big office building is hermetically sealed. And when the plane came in, it punctured that hermetic seal and I don't know how many, 15 stories or so, paper all of a sudden got sucked out
just
through the flames, and so was coming out, burned, it was just very uncomfortable. So, being a solid Wall Street guy, I walked around the corner, went back to work, and I noticed walking right by the stock exchange, there were a series of, Japanese tourists queued up to go in and tour the stock exchange. Standard,
right.
There's always somebody there.
Yeah.
So I go up. I was on the sixth floor of the office building. All of a sudden, we hear a tremendous ruckus, loud, and the building shakes. Our building, block and a half away shakes. And so, I get a phone call from my boss at the time. The corporation was in Denver, and then she had, by that point, more news of what was going on. I had to go to the window to take the call because it was an old, solid building. And I'm looking out the window, and I see said Japanese tourists sprinting down Wall Street, heading south, away from the towers. I thought, well, that's kind of odd.
Heading to the East River.
Right, right. And then I see a bunch of smoke. And then all of a sudden on the sixth floor, I don't see anything.
Wow.
Just smoke. So I figured, all right, it's time to...
Big windows, and then all of a sudden...
Time to get out of Dodge.
Yep. Day to night.
Right, right.
Holy Toledo.
So I went downstairs and walked out, and, you know, gradually you'd start to hear what was going on, and it was, you know... too many funerals to go to.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So you walked. Tell us your journey.
As it turned out, our oldest daughter had just turned 17 a couple months earlier.
Right.
And I was going to give her the car that we had. It was in the shop up on in the 60s on the west side, getting, you know, because you're getting the brakes fixed, you know, stuff you do for a kid. So I ended up walking up there getting the car, and to this day I don't know what route I ended up taking to get home, because you couldn't go, we lived in Jersey at the time, could not go west across the river, so I must have gone up through the Tap or something. But it was.
Did you make it all the way up to the GW, or all the way to Tappan Zee?
It didn't go to the GW. I'm not 100% sure.
You don't remember?
What? No. Yeah. It was a blur.
So you were literally on automatic pilot.
Sure. And you know, obviously talking to Linda, my wife, on the cell phone, but getting cell service, because everyone who had survived was on the cell phone. Cell phones were blocked. I mean, we finally got through and had a brief conversation, but then it cut out.
Then it cut right out again. Wow, Ed. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously we knew you were there. I was working for Advest in Mystic at the time, Dr. Lionelli's building, and I was the only one with a TV in the office. So the whole office, the CPAs downstairs, the doctors, you know, 30 people in my office watching what's going on.
Sure.
And, you know, of course, Laurie's on the phone. And, you know, Fitch High School let right out because we have 42% Navy dependents there.
Oh, sure.
And they were sending all the subs out. So we literally, the kids literally ran down to say goodbye to Daddy mainly and Mom. And the school's closed, so we all gathered together and went to Grandma and Grandpa's house.
Sure,
that's what you do. You
nobody know? Knew what was going on.
Nobody
at that
really
point,
knew
yeah.
what was going on, so yeah. it was absolutely terrible. Thanks for sharing that, by the way. You know, how do you keep your sense of humor during the rough times? You know, because you know you had them on Wall Street.
Well,
it's a philosophical question. Yeah, what the heck, right?
Yeah, you have to. I mean, it's a great business, but it's fundamentally. Making a living, it's not the some part of your life, you know.
Right.
You just gotta keep it's sometimes hard to keep that perspective,
but
you have to.
I tell a story about Tommy Chase, who was our dollar bond trader on the desk, who dropped dead at 37 from hypertension because he let it become too much of his life.
We all know guys
like just burned out and whatnot. What surprised you most about your career? Is anything like just stand out the most in terms of 35 years of hearing traders scream?
Well, for our next college English professor, the fact that it's worked is the biggest surprise, I suppose.
Yeah, when you first were in school studying for...
Yeah, I know,
Imagine. You went to Rutgers and then got your master's at Harvard, right?
Right, yeah. Right. But don't hold that against me.
No, we won't. We won't. Let's go back to the Federal Reserve, because I know it's something that you want to talk about, because there's a big change coming. Yellen's out, new guys coming in. What do you think?
Yeah. Yellen's out. Jerome Powell is in. Powell is a centrist. He voted in support of Yellen's positions for the last number of years. Everyone says that the Fed is supposed to be politically neutral, but there's always a political element of it. And Powell is regarded as a Republican version of Yellen. I mean, he's a centrist. He's really good. The interesting thing, so it's going to be business as usual, probably from the right. chairperson's standpoint. In that, you know, gradual, you know. reduction in the balance sheet, selling some treasuries, mortgages. They're up to like $6 billion a month right now, which is when you own $7 trillion, it's a drop in the bucket. But but the more interesting thing is the retirement of the vice chairman, Stanley Fisher.
Right.
And Fisher is beloved by all Federal Reserve governors for the last two generations. I mean, Fisher was a former vice chairman of Citibank. He was the head of the International Money Fund.
Right.
He was the head of the World Bank.
Right.
He was a governor, a Fed governor in Israel for a number of years. So he has the vast international experience.
Right.
He's in his late 70s, and he's just, you know, personal reasons. So he's just hanging it up. And he's going to be broad international experience will be difficult to replace.
Right.
Similarly, Dudley, the governor of the of New York, which is a key district because that governor of New York, of course,
oversees all
the big banks and Wall Street. And Dudley did a fantastic job in the 2007-2008 crisis,
right.
Providing liquidity, communicating
right.
to Bernanke at the time.
Right.
The need for liquidity was
right.
very well regarded on the street. And
okay.
he's retiring too. So replacing that international expertise for Fisher and the financial expertise for Dudley in New York is going to be a tall order.
Right. Right, right. Do you think the Fed will keep shrinking their balance sheet that they built up in 2008-2009?
Sure, sure. If nothing else, they own mortgages. If they do nothing and stop buying, as mortgages pay down, it'll reduce too. But I think the $6 billion a month of sales will increase modestly. If they pull the plug and sold everything, interest rates would go up 3% because their holdings are so vast, so they have to do it gradually.
Okay. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit further about what you think is going to happen. We'll talk a little bit about people out there preparing for retirement. We've seen a lot of people struggle in the last few years. Seems like the job market's getting better, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. And we'll just do what we can to help the people out there prepare for retirement. I've always put a special emphasis. You and me have children in our 20s, early 30s. Getting them off the right foot, getting them to save automatically, pay themselves first. I'll touch on that again. That's something that's a pet project of mine. And we'll talk a little bit about Connecticut, but pretty much I just want to summarize some of the things you talked about. So we'll come back. My name is Dennis O'Brien, www.obrienretired.com, dobrien@ifgrr.com. If you'd like my retirement 10 commandments, I'd like to make an appointment to chat and let me review your situation. I got a lot of people coming in. I swear nobody knows what they own. It's amazing. But in any case, come on back and look forward to the last segment. Take care. Bye-bye. Hey everybody, Dennis O'Brien, President of O'Brien Retirement, www.obrienretired.com. You have any questions? Give us a call at 860-464-9490. I have with me Ed Dangerfield, who's been a 35-year pro bond guy on Wall Street, and him and his group manage billions of dollars in bond money. And many of you are going, what's a bond? What's a stock? Well, a bond is something you buy when you want fixed income. You want an income stream coming from you. You put $100,000 in bonds, and if you have a 4% coupon, you get $4,000 a year. Some of the bonds can be tax-free. Some of the bonds can be taxable. A U.S. Treasury right now, Ed, what's the yield on a 30-year Treasury?
It's like 2.73.4, something like
that. So if you put $100,000 in a 30-year Treasury and you hold it for 30 years, you get about $2,700 a year.
The big question is, who is loaning the United States government money at 2.75 for 30 years?
Someone from a country where the rate is 0.6.
Well, the U.S. 10-year is a 2.33. The German 10-year Bund has interest rates have skyrocketed up and is now 0.36 is their interest rate. So,
that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was reading a piece, retirement tips, and one of the tips the person gave was, and I thought this was interesting, and maybe you could comment on it. When you're going to retire, establish a trusted coach relationship. Our clients rely on us to make managed decisions about a portion of their portfolio. So many times some of the people recommend hiring a professional finance coach or a life coach or someone, an attorney, accountant, or financial advisor plays this role to play quarterback and help you with your decisions. Sometimes clients recommend finding someone among your friends or acquaintances to help you tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. You know, that's a real friend, right?
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. It can be a professional, someone who's knowledgeable about finance and knows you well and you feel comfortable with. What do you think of that advice? You think that's good advice?
Well, I think, for people who have been, making their money not in the financial area, and all of a sudden, and don't have the kind of experience that people in finance have, that it makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
I think so too, because it gives you someone that can help quarterback stuff for you too. Especially if you have a special situation, if you have a special needs child, if you have something, that's unique to your situation. If something happens to you, who's going to help my wife, my partner, my spouse, my children, who's going to help quarterback things through so they're not taken advantage of and whatnot. So,
sure.
That's another thing. Another tip was, and I kind of like this tip because I see these E-Trade commercials, you trade online, get into the gambling thing and whatnot. And one bit of advice was a lot of our clients, they'll give us their money to invest for them, conservative or more aggressive. But we always recommend that they keep a small account online where if they have an idea they want to invest in and it doesn't fit in with what I'm doing, they can go do that on the side, keeping a 10, 15 smaller account, $20,000 on the side, and they can do sort of that thing. What do you think of that? You think that's good advice?
I think so. I mean, it's hard for me because in a regulated industry, we can't do that. We're restricted in what we can play in, and that's a good thing because being a bond guy, I'm not an equity specialist by any means.
One of the things we always advise is having a tax advisor. A lot of people like to do it online; it's cheaper and whatnot. But I've always been a firm believer in having a team around you, and especially a good tax advisor because. It's really key. That's where many, many mistakes that you don't want to make mistake in this area. And they pay for themselves, I think, many times over. What do you think?
But that's my experience, too. I mean, everyone consults an outside attorney to do a will. Everyone does that. But, that's not necessarily the place to stop when you're consulting a CPA or someone who does this professionally is important. Consulting somebody who, as you approach retirement, makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Another tip is family-centered vacations can be the best, and I know you're going to smile at this one because we've done many of these. According to many of our clients, family trips can be the most satisfying vacations. Go to family or bring family along. We've had a lot of good times on a lot of trips.
Yeah. What I tell my brothers is that your wife and my wife, we vacation in packs.
Well, our recent trip to Budapest is a testament to that.
Absolutely.
When Justin and Agnes got married there.
Wonderful trip.
Oh,
yeah.
That was the best. Yeah. It was so much fun and everything else. Another thing, and I think you'll chuckle over this one, is when you're retired, you should consider having a pet. They're a great source of companionship.
Oh, don't go
Ed,
there.
Ed, you have some pet stories.
Don't go
Linda,
there.
Linda, if you're listening, you're shaking your head up and down. Yes, I know you are. I know you are. And everything else. Exercise more and eat better. That's what I'm trying to do these days.
Absolutely.
And it's so, so important. I'm on the 5-2 program, which is eat for 5 days, 2 meals a day, and then Sunday and Monday I fast. And down 17 and still going, so hopefully it continues. And Ed, you keep yourself in good shape, so it's very, very important.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and whatnot. So don't gain a lot of weight. Limit your TV time. Here's a good one. If your estate is large, and I know you people out there have that problem, it might be good to make gifts now. You want to bring a family together? Write a check. Come on. Right, Ryan? Come on, Mom and Dad, Grandma and Grandpa. Let's have family vacations together and give me a check at the end, and whatnot. Don't ignore foreign assets as a potential investment in your portfolio. Start a home-based business. I think the happiest people are the ones that keep busy, keep keep active, out there with their friends, even if they have a morning coffee at McDonald's, which we did on the way here when we met some of the local characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so much fun and whatnot. You know, roll over your 401k. Well, you know, some people say you should, some people say you shouldn't. It's really up to the client. I always look and see what the choice of investments they have, what the cost is, and whether they're consolidating, because many people have them at many different places, and they don't know what to do. They don't have a guy or a gal.
Right.
And they just sit there, you know inertia. It is what it is.
Sure.
They're so afraid to make a mistake, they just leave it.
Right.
So,
and if you have smaller accounts spread out among a couple of different former employers, any kind of buy and sells, you're paying larger percentages of fees because they're smaller fees. If you consolidate it, you can even save on the
save on the fees even more.
Yeah,
I think it's good. Here's one tip. I was kind of surprised it's in here. If you're investing in fixed income, don't overlook ETFs. ETFs are very low cost for very conservative people. I used to look at some of the Vanguard ones, the intermediate type of term length. They don't yield a lot. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, sure.
Because you're playing off that 10-year treasury. But, you know, if you can get 3% and you're not risking a lot and you don't want to be in the market right now for whatever reason, or you're looking to buy a house, you know, in the next couple of years and you don't want to take the risk of the stock market, it makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
So it's a low cost. The one thing I've found is I have two different clients, one in ETF growth and one in and I inherited this account that has this old-time mutual fund. And I just saw in the activity that the old-time mutual fund in a taxable account just declared $12,000 in capital gains. Ouch. Meanwhile, the ETF, there's no declared gains because they basically buy and hold the indexed securities. Where the active manager, because he's been buying and selling, has created capital gains in a taxable account. So that client who I inherited this investment is going to have a nasty surprise come next April because of the active management. So that's one of the other advantages of indexes versus active management. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe the active manager's grown enough to make up for the taxes, but maybe they haven't.
Maybe they haven't, right?
Yeah, that sort of thing. So, and whatnot. Be diversified, but not too diversified. Well, I hate to say it, but with indexes that I use, buy one, I sometimes I own 500 stocks, you know, so I like that. And don't forget to remember your safety deposit box. Keep everybody up, keep the key people you know up to date on what's in there, how to get into it. Make sure the right people are signers off on that so you can do that. And also review your life insurance. Some people don't need it anymore because they don't have minors. Some people still do. So it's one of those things. Here's a pet peeve of mine. Drive the safest car you can. I'm a big believer in that. Okay. Don't get me wrong. I believe in gas mileage and I have friends that own the Toyota Prius and they're great little cars. And don't get me wrong, but if I'm getting on I-95 in Connecticut in the summer, I want weight. Yeah. I want to be safe.
Yeah.
And because it's just a big pet peeve of mine, I really firmly believe in that and whatnot. So any other thoughts, comments, concerns? What do you think, Ed?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Life is good.
Yeah. You know, I think we're both very, very lucky people. You know, we live in beautiful areas. We have wonderful families.
We married well.
We married extremely well. And we have a great father-in-law.
Absolutely.
And he's the best. And I hope he's okay today because he had a little fender bender yesterday in Mystic. Somebody backed into him from a state we won't name. And but the Stonington police officer was extremely kind to him. When he found out what insurance he had, he asked if he was a vet. And, of course, they went on and on and talked about that. So it was a... you know, it's kind of traumatic for him, but he called in and got everything organized. And he has an appointment. And when you're 84 years old, you know, it's kind of cool that he got everything organized.
Absolutely.
And whatnot. So,
yeah.
And I think
84 years old, young.
And I think the police officer was very impressed when like six of us showed up. And we were looking for the car that hit him. We were looking in the street for any evidence. We were walking down, checking everything out. The policeman was like, who are these guys?
Well, yeah,
that's my son-in-law. That's my grandson. We had a gang of us with him. But in any case, that's what family's all about. So, and whatnot. But hey, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Dennis. Thanks.
Life's an
me.
Adventure, you know?
Absolutely.
I love doing it. It's a wonderful thing out there to do. I've met a lot of nice people doing it. And I'm looking forward, you know, super family vacations in the future. Your daughter's already angling for a spring vacation. And Caitlin, if you're listening out there, we're going to figure out something whenever, you know, whenever Daddy can get some time off, and we'll have some fun. But in any case, thank you, everyone, for listening. My name's Dennis O'Brien with Ed Dangerfield. My website is www.obrienretire.com. You can email me at dobrien@ifgrr.com. Call me anytime at 860-415-9614. And if you see my old silver Mercedes around town with my sign on, just wave to me. I don't care. Just wave. Anyway, have a great weekend, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.